Good morning, good morning. Good to see you again. So yesterday I talked a lot about companies that look like any other company. You walk into a Whole Foods, you see our beverage, you see our protein bars, you see, it's not, it's the witness of why we do what we do. And we present ourselves very clearly as a company that's competing against Coca-Cola or Nike or whatever the particular product might be. Today, I want to start with our nonprofit, not for sale, our ministry, to empower people who are at risk from human trafficking, right? So our role in the world is to try to inoculate people from being taken advantage of, going upstream, not only helping them get out of the drowning, but stop them from falling in the river first, right? So that's our goal as an organization. And so I want to talk about a model that we have developed out of the nonprofit. So to be entrepreneurial doesn't mean you have a for-profit. That's just a vehicle, right? It's the destination you want to get to. What will be the best vehicle to get you there? So I want to talk about the experimentation we've done with the nonprofit model. And this is Toos Heemskerk, who is a rock star social entrepreneur in Holland, in Amsterdam. When I met her about 8 years ago, she had already been working 16 years in the red light district of Amsterdam. The women behind the windows, the young girls who are selling their bodies every day. She'd been working with them in very traditional service and ministry areas, helping them with their health care, helping them with their legal services, spiritual and emotional development. And so when I had heard about her, but she's a bit of a legend in the anti-trafficking work in Europe, particularly any of you who have worked in Europe, you know Toos. So when I met her, I was talking to her about how much research she has. I mean, she knows 3 out of 4 girls come from Eastern Europe, Hungary, Moldova, Bulgaria. These are not young Dutch girls who grow up and say, should I go to university or should I work in the commercial sex industry, right? The young girls that are being trafficked, or they might go to Holland thinking they're going to have a better life, and then they get managed, controlled, and they can't get out. So when I met Toos, I was so excited. We talked about it, her knowledge, what I call her social capital. I mean, 16 years of relationships, the trust she has there. But then she told me she was going to quit. I said, why are you quitting? She said, well, David, I have been promising these young women if they can get out of the window, get away from their trafficker, that there's a better life. But I'm lying to them. What better life? For their day-to-day existence. Said, you know, they're here in Holland with an entertainment visa, which is really a visa to do sex work. And then they can't do anything else here. And if they go back to their home country, they'll be re-trafficked, re-exploited. So I said, look, I've been experimenting with a lot of different models. Let's do something here crazy. Let's start a company with the very purpose of employing the women who are now commercial sex workers, the prostitutes. Let's start the company with that in mind. So the Dutch love their soup. I don't know why they love their gourmet soup. You know, here in America, we got Starbucks in every corner. There, they got a lot of soup companies. And so we said, why don't we start a soup company? All right, and so we follow the same model. And this is what I want to stretch your mind this morning a little bit as we close. Whatever we do with the best quality. There's no excuse because you're a Christian that you can do a lousy business. Right? Your cause does not cover up your bad product. So even for a nonprofit, and I even have to say that, it embarrasses me, even a nonprofit does not get a pass-through. So we went out and we hired the best chef in Holland, right? If you get the best quality talent, trust me, you will get the money. You will get the capital. You'll get the investment. So we found the best chef in Holland. We got a kitchen in the red light district. We started making soups. We started catering to the windows themselves. Now, here's where there's a bit of a mind shift. You're used to soup kitchens because these poor women, they've been exploited. They're being trafficked. They're being violently treated every day. We should give away soup. That's not a business. So you want some soup? It's beautiful. It's a goulash. We have a Hungarian recipe. It's gorgeous. It's going to cost you €3.50. You want salad? It's €5.50. They know they're a customer to a company. They have a relationship with us and we treat them with the dignity. They tell us later, we love that you came to us as a customer, not as a victim. And so we're starting to engage these women and we start delivering. We have a business with 100 women. We're delivering soup. And that starts growing. We start a texting service. What's the soup today? It's ginger. Oh, could you bring it between 3 and 3:30 when I'm not seeing John's? Right? Now we're delivering. We have 300 women. Now, I have to say with some embarrassment, because you know I'm a business professor, this next part. The chief of police contacts our group and says, you need to come in. And I go, oh my gosh, we never got a business license to do this. We took a kitchen, we started selling soup as if, you know, you didn't need any kind of license to do this in Amsterdam. So we go in and see the chief of police. He says, we hear you're selling soup in the red light district to the women. We said, yes, we are. We hear it's amazing soup. Best chef in Holland, oh my gosh. And I tell the man, you know, he goes, could you cater all the police precincts? Because we'd love to support what you're doing. So I don't know when you're doing your market analysis what your core demographic is, but if you can get sex workers and cops, you've got a really good core demographic. All right, so then you're creating this vision and dream, but now here's something that's really interesting. Always have demand before you build supply. And as business people, I'll say, the reason I say that is it's easier to build supply because demand is hard. Right? Oh, how, you know, let's train 100 women to sew. Okay, where are you going to sell what they make? Let's give people, you know, let's train people how to be technicians. Okay, for whom? Nothing worse than training someone they have no job. Right? So, once you have demand, you can always figure out supply. Once you have supply, doesn't mean you can always figure out demand. All right, so we have demand now. We need more chefs. So I went to Jamie Oliver, he's the naked chef. And if you don't know who he is, it sounds really weird in this context. But Jamie Oliver's done this terrific job with culinary schools. Again, I'm not going to create a culinary school. It's not my core expertise. So would you help us? We build a culinary school. First people we invite to be students, of course, are the women behind the windows. We train them to be chefs and caterers. And then because you start a vision, because you start a dream, and people go, that is such a cool idea. We had the CEO of the largest grocery store, it's called Hema. It's like the Trader Joe's of that part of Europe. Came to us and said, we want to commercialize your soup. We're not very good at marketing again. The soup's not for sale, but every grocery store that Hema has, 565 stores in Belgium and Holland and France, are now selling our soup. I need more chefs. I need more training. We have 45 women coming every month joining our chef program. All right? Being equipped and then having the opportunity to learn certified training that they are being equipped for restaurants. And this is my favorite part. The rest of the story is just context. When we first went to Holland, not for sale, we said, look, this is the last place you should go to address human trafficking and sex trade. The Dutch are very proud of their tolerance. They're very proud of the long tradition they've had. They feel like it's safe. And so, okay, we found a great entrepreneur named Toos Heemskerk. We got behind her. The mayor of Amsterdam said, you know what? Why are we known as the brothel of Europe? Why do men from Greece and Holland, UK, come for sex weekends to Holland? We've got Van Gogh, we've got Anne Frank, we've got the canal, we're a beautiful city. Why are we the brothel of Europe? He said, I'm gonna shut down half the red light district, and I wanna change what it looks like, and I wanna give, not for sale, I wanna give you a brothel to turn into a restaurant. And that's what we did. So we started a restaurant, and okay, we're gonna need chefs. Oh, we have them. Right? And so we call it dignità. Dignity in French and Italian and Spanish and English, dignità. And we open it with the presumption that we are going to be the best restaurant in Holland. That's our goal. We do not advertise the fact, hey, come to our restaurant, a prostitute will cook an omelet for you. That's not our pitch. right? Our pitch is we have the best food. In fact, our brunch is without comparison, right? And that's what we do. Vogue magazine names us one of the top 10 restaurants in Amsterdam now. British Airways magazine last month did a feature on the 20 top places in the world to get a brunch, and we're one of them, right? So excellence. And because you have excellence, I cannot believe this, but in year one, and this is to my Dutch team, I can't take any credit. In year one, we do 1 million euros with 300,000 euro profit. Year one. You know restaurant business? You say, wait 4 years, you'll finally start making a profit. I was just amazed. So based on the revenues, what we did is we started a second restaurant. Digny Tattoo. Twice the size. This is now doing 2.5 million euros. Our total net profit this year will be around 750,000 euros. Because of that, we're opening. I'm going over in 3 weeks to Amsterdam to open Dignitas number 3. All in Amsterdam now. The profits are poured back into the restaurant. And in fact, we now have a completely funded culinary school. I don't ask you for a donation today. All I ask is next time you're in Amsterdam, go to my restaurant and have a great brunch. That's how you can support us, right? I love that. But you know what happens when you create as a nonprofit your own entrepreneurial energy? Other people want to be a part of it. So some of you might have heard of Chanel. I wear it every day. Chanel contacted us and said, we have $250,000 we want to give away to your, how can we best do that? Can we give it away? We said, yeah, okay. How about for the culinary school, right? Because that's an expense we have that other restaurants might not have, is that the amount of training we do. So if you could put your donation towards that, that creates more net profit, which we can pour into more restaurants. So what's your vision, David, for Dignitas? Well, I want to come to Berlin, Hamburg, London, Stockholm. Hard Rock Cafe, better watch out. We're coming to kick your ass. And we got a better business model. Because at the heart of what we do is mission to bring about freedom, to bring about a life of dignity for women to choose their own destiny. Right? That's what we're here. That they realize the God-given freedom to write your own story. That's a nonprofit model. And the reason I say that is that we have to expand our notion of what we're doing with our ministries, our nonprofits, and our for-profit companies. Not only can for-profit companies scale, nonprofits can scale. Ministries can scale. It's just, what's your strategy for scale? What's your strategy? And again, it's not for the sake of scale alone, but it's the amount of women and children and men we can empower and we can give freedom to, and we could, it was Mott's vision of a better world. What BAM can contribute to the world. One thing I loved about one of his points was, okay, I would love to see how BAM starts to address the environmental problems we have. We talk a lot about ministry to people. How do we scale and expand what we're doing for environmental problems? So there is no intractable problem that we cannot create a ministry or a business to address. Right? Try human trafficking. That's a tough one. All right, but what about the environment? What about the air we breathe? How do we create a business out of that, a BAM out of that? Well, I got to tell you, my biggest inspiration is just meeting people. It's relationships. I don't know if you're like me. I like to write in coffee shops. When I'm at home and I'm like writing something, I like to distract myself. Oh, gee, I could do some laundry now, or yeah, I could cook some muffins. Well, you know, I just keep distracting myself. But when I'm in a coffee shop, I'm blocking everyone out. So I'm trying to focus on my task. And all right, so anyway, I write in coffee shops a lot. And so I'm in a coffee shop in my little town of Half Moon Bay, California. And this guy comes in. His name is Dirk Andrews. And it's a pretty small town, Half Moon Bay. So he walks in, we say hi. And then next morning, I'm there working on my book. He comes in again. Hey, Dirk, nice to meet you. Third morning, he's in there, and you're a small town. You got to have a conversation. So I ask him what he does. And he asked me what I do. So I talk about being an investor. And at that time, I was doing a lot of venture capital work. And then he said, I said, what do you do? He said, well, I work in robotics with plants. Now, the idea behind that would be right now while I'm talking to you in Philadelphia, I want to check on my artichokes back in California. So I'll look online. How much nitrogen are they getting? Because I'm reading it with my robotics. How much water? Oh, I'm going to give them some more nitrogen, right? I can farm via laptop. So that's pretty sophisticated. You know, he was doing this in rural California. This is about 8 years ago. And so I'm thinking, okay, robotics. I said, well, do you study at Stanford or MIT? Now, I got to tell you, there was a certain level of genius to him. I didn't know if he was a lunatic or just brilliant. So I said, okay, did you stay at MIT or Stanford? He goes, no, I never graduated from high school. Okay, lunatic. Yeah, I went and I was a sniper for the Green Berets, and he told me this whole story, and I go, okay, now you're doing robotics? I don't know about you, but I don't tend to pick up robotics when I'm just flying on an airplane, a few robotic lessons, right? So I get to know him. He disappears for like 3 months, and he comes back, and he goes, hey, David, I just had this brainstorm. I need to talk to you about it. Do you know much about farm animals? I go, okay, we're really going somewhere here. You know, pigs and chickens and cows are contributing to the greenhouse effect. And a lot of it has to do with the methane, but also the ammonia that is going up in the atmosphere. And the ammonia in the atmosphere is a huge a public health problem now. In California alone, it's estimated $36 billion is going out because of the ammonia going in our lungs. This is why, back to Holland for a second, Holland requires every farmer that has livestock, whether it's chickens, pigs, or cows, they have to capture their ammonia. It has to be captured. You can't just let it go up in the atmosphere. Now, this is very close to me because my mother died several years ago of stage 3 lung cancer. She grew up on a farm her whole life, and she never smoked in her life, never had any kind of other environmental impact. And it's very personal for me. So when he told me he found a way to capture this ammonia, and I said, well, tell me more about that. He goes, well, I capture it out of the air so it doesn't go into your lung and my lung. And then I take the gas and I liquefy it. And then I burn it with sulfur. So you have ammonium and you have sulfur. If you are a chemist, you can see ammonium sulfate. And ammonium sulfate, for those of you who have had a farm background, is fertilizer. It's an organic fertilizer. An organic fertilizer that is A, organic, it has no bio burden because composting carries the burden of whatever went into that compost, right? So there's no bio burden, and it's ammoniacal, which means a plant can assume it day one. It doesn't need 45 days to mineralize into the ground. A plant can assume it day one. A rich organic fertilizer made for pennies of what we spend on doing traditional chemical fertilizer. So if you go into Whole Foods now, or some people call it Whole Paycheck, if you go into Whole Foods and you buy peaches that are organic, why are they so much more expensive than the non-organic or regular peaches? That is the chemically grown peaches, right? It's because the cost of fertilizer, organic fertilizer, is so high, among other things. What if we could change the economics of that? So that in 3-4 years from now, we say, why are you buying that chemically grown peach? Organic peach is so much cheaper. What if we change those economics? You change the economics, you're back to what Motz is talking about. You're inspiring business models that incentivize people to capture ammonia and use ammonia in a way that doesn't go into our lungs, but rather is used for some greater purpose. Imagine the benefits to the earth. Why do you do that? Because it's God's earth. I'm a follower of Jesus. We honor the creation. That's the kind of world we should be living in. We're trying to create new models for this. So I love this. Dirk started really small. This is his factory. And I was his only investor. And, he's a strange guy, really is. I found out he is brilliant and a lunatic at the same time. I mean, he'll go to Best Buy and get a microwave. And next thing I know, he's like making ammonium sulfate in the microwave. I don't even know how he does it. Right, look at that. I mean, that's his lab. So for 8 years, he works on it. And then finally, we commercialize it. Our full-scale factory in Watsonville, that's the size of a football field. We capture all the ammonia. We have 150,000 chickens that are in a barn next door. We capture the ammonia. It goes underground in pipes, goes into our factory, and the magic happens. So today we're developing this in Europe. We have certification, organic certification for our process, which is not easy to get. And because we have EU certification, we automatically get USDA certification. And the reason for that is USDA certification is more political than practical. So let's go to Europe, get it, and oh, you're recognized in Europe? We'll recognize you. It's the backdoor way in, yeah? So, growing crops with organic fertilizer, a healthier world for you, wellness for you, goodness for the world. Those are the models. We got to think deeper and wider. I think that's what you're referring to. Let's get out of the boxes we're in and think big. We got talent. We got incredible talent here, but we think too small. Right? Let's think big. Quality, impact, scale. So, what I love about this is coming back full circle to the Amazon. Yesterday, I talked about a couple of companies, Rebel and Z Shoes. By the way, yesterday, when I was talking to folks, people were saying to me, how do I get those shoes? Well, some of you don't use Venmo, I found out. So if you don't use Venmo, I created a code for you, BAM Hero 2018. And if you go to the website, Z Shoes Organic, and on the bottom of our shoes, it says organic and dignity. Does your shoe have a story? I want to know right now. I've got a story. I can talk to people about a better world of impact for the people of the Amazon and for the environment. These are sustainable. In fact, I'm gonna compost these in with my fertilizer company. And I'm going to grow tomatoes on top of my shoes. It's a great gimmick, but pretty cool, right? So I think it's better than vegan. You can eat them. I think rather I'll grow tomatoes on top of them. All right, so broader and deeper visionaries who are executing ruthlessly. Not visionaries who then leave the ideas on the table, but then do ruthless execution. So how do we equip a generation? Because, you know, we have some young people here, we need more young people who are thinking first and foremost about changing the world with their business talents, with their investment talents, right? Yesterday I mentioned I go to these great institutions like Eastern and Harvard and Yale and Westmont, and they always tell me they'll come and work for me if they can't get a job anywhere else. So how do we get the best and the brightest, not the least? For me, it's part of equipping a generation. So with Jim King, where's Jim King? I know he has his Z shoes on, so he's looking really good here. Where is he? There he is, right here. Jim King and I started a new company this last year because we got bored. It's called Change University. ChangeUniversity.com. At Change University, we are creating opportunities for entrepreneurs. It doesn't have to be, it's young of heart, not necessarily young of age. And we are creating opportunities for them to go around the world and learn from the entrepreneurs on the ground. 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And so, you know, imagine going to Northern Thailand. Here's Krunam, who I talked about yesterday, that had rescued 27 kids. Now we have a village in Northern Thailand. Next to her is her young trainee that she met as a street kid. They go into the streets of Burma or Myanmar and Thailand and rescue kids. Imagine going to work 4 or 5 months with them. Or imagine going into community health in Vietnam, where you get to work in creating community health models, not just for, again, the people who are in urgent care, but long-term preventative care. Imagine going to Dignitas, working with Moraine, our general manager, right? Our general manager, who now is going to be managing 3 restaurants, working in the restaurant, learning about how to create a successful restaurant business that's empowering people at risk. Imagine going and having a cultural experience where you're learning to dance with a native tribe in the Amazon. Right? Really funny story on this. This is my shoe team, and we're ready to leave. And they said, excuse me, but if you don't dance with us, we feel very badly that we can't trust you in the future. So these two young men had to dance. I was just laughing so hard. All right. Ideas can change the world. Heart can change the world. Faith can change the world. Faith, hope, and love. Right? Faith, hope, and love. And we're people who exercise that in a way because we have a vision of the future. We have a hope in our hearts. And so I'm so inspired over the last 2 days to be with you. So many people with ideas coming up to me. It's crazy how many ideas there are in here. And people with the courage and the faith to make them happen. You know, every day you're not right and every day you don't feel strong, but every day you can feel brave. And please be brave with your visions. I unfortunately have to leave straight to the train station, but my guy with the Z shoes on, Jim King, is going to be here. Talk to him and he's going to help steer you in the right direction if we can help you in any way. Thank you very much. Great to be here today.